We're going to spend the next hour in a nice, fun session called Questions and Answers. Don't put your back to the Vyasa Sun. Just turn sideways or sit over there or something. So, I'm not going to sing, Rajiv. We're just going to launch. We had lots of kirtan already. If you don't have, who needs, we're going to ask you to spend 5-10 minutes writing something, a question, if you'd like to ask a question. In case you don't have any paper ready, raise your hand and Jamuna Jivana will give you some paper. And if you need a pen, he'll give you a pen, but you got to give the pen back. So those of you that have paper, you can start. You can write down whatever question you'd like to write. And if you don't have a question, that's okay too. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. Maybe a half a sheet will do, because I don't think they're going to have a whole question, a whole page. Jamuna Jivana? Just like get around. Jamuna Jivana? There's other people. Who still doesn't have paper? So you just circulate. So here we go. And if you're still writing, keep writing. We'll see if we get there. Okay, we're not going to get there. You can stop writing. Okay. How about if I'll answer this one when we... tomorrow. In case of health issues, mind always depends on science, and going in depression mood rather than depending on Krishna. How to divert the mind to depend on Krishna? Well, you look at this path and you look at that path and you say, which is a better path? Depending on science and depression, or depending on Krishna. And supposing you go down the science and depression path and then see what it's like. What is it like? It reminds me of Prabhupada's discussion with Professor Katovsky. And he said, we're the same. We both have some authority. For you, your authority is Lenin. For me, my authority is Krishna. We're the same. We both accept some authority. So now let us consider, which is better authority, Lenin or Krishna? Should I turn left or turn right? Where should I invest my faith? Where should my energy go? So you look thoughtfully at options. And now the conditioning says, doesn't matter what reasoning and intelligence and authority say, conditioning rules. Then you go to the conditioning route. But at some point, the conditioning experience is quite unsatisfactory, and then you do the reset and you go, well, let's take a look at this again. Now, if there's a medical problem, certainly taking taking the help of a medical professional. We should do. But medical professionals, good medical professionals, will tell you, those who have a religious shelter, faith in God, and a religious, even better, a practice of religion, the medical science is going to be more effective for that person than the one that doesn't. So you don't have to, it's not necessarily an either or. You go to a doctor and you continue your faith in Krishna. As long as I am at home or in association of devotees, I have a sense of calm and presence of Krishna in my life. But then, as soon as I start my daily schedule, everything takes me away from that. I don't find myself in a great encouragement what to do. Join the temple. Real simple. Oh, become devotees in your home and have association with devotees in your home. That's another solution. Or invite devotees to your home. And in your home, do the things that you do with the devotees when you're with the devotees in the temple. Like hear and chant and remember. And you can do it, you know, through sound vibration, and there's all kinds of technology. You can be present, virtual classes, and every morning and evening, just tune into the ISKCON Chicago website and you got a morning and evening class. They probably have Jai Jagannath Kirtans on there too, and just bring it into your home. Another answer is, another consideration is, there's a time for this and there's a time for that and there's a time for other things. I mean, the nicest, very poetic expression is from the Old Testament. There's a season for all things. By God's design, there's a time for this and there's a time for that and there's a time for other things. So when you're in the temple, celebrate. And when you're home, don't lament. When you're in your home, you have to rely more on your own resource, desire, and not just the synergy of others that have desire and enthusiasm. So that's a nice time to develop your own determination, your own internal strength, things like that. And then the next time you come to the temple, it'll be even better. And next time you go back to your home, it'll be even better. From that, depending upon your life situation. Or consider, like a number of devotees here have done. They lived somewhere and they moved close to the temple so they can come regularly to the temple for the morning program and participate, chant japa with the devotees regularly and then go do what they have to do and then come back in the evening. And that's why there's temples. Or in your own locality, you have little sangha groups, bhakti vriksha groups or namahata groups or groups, and do things together. How can we look upon anarthas so that we can make progress in our sadhana? Well, you look the other way. Look upon Krishna and depend upon Krishna and get the scrub-a-dub procedure out and cleanse those through the medium of Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam. the cleansing process of the, how you look upon the anarthas as something that what the word means, something that's not wanted. And you invest in that which is wanted. And by investing in that which is wanted, the unwanted naturally becomes removed, or you can make an extra effort to try to remove. In the Krishna book, in the chapter when Akura comes to Vrindavan to take Krishna with him to Mathura, while leaving, Akura saw Chaturbhuja form of Krishna. It is being said that Krishna never left Vrindavan. I cannot comprehend this by the fact that if he is in Vrindavan, then why the Brijvasis were always sad and anxious to hear about Krishna? And the answer is, he never left Vrindavan because he hid himself in the hearts of the residents of Vrindavan. They didn't know that because he hid himself. When he wants to hide himself, no one can find him. But he never left Vrindavan. He was always in their hearts. And they were in his heart. But he had a lila where he apparently left Vrindavan. Are there books in the spiritual world? Only electronic copies. I've never heard that question asked before. I can think of some other ones that I never heard asked before. Okay. Are there toilets in the spiritual world? I guess we'll have to wait and find out. No indication of books in the spiritual world. People need books that can't remember things. And people that can remember things don't need books. Books is a Kali Yuga phenomena. They just remember Krishna always without a book. It is said that when we serve Krishna, everyone is satisfied, just like watering the root of a tree. But we have also heard that the leaf, which has become separated from the tree, is not benefited. So, can those persons who are atheistic and inimical to devotees really be benefited by when performing devotional service? And the answer is yes. The atmosphere is spiritualized by the performance of devotional service, and the non-devotee, you know, depending on the degree of non-devotion, you know, the Kamsas and Hiranyakashipus become irritated. That's good for them because they're becoming spiritualized. They're becoming disinfected. So it's good for them. How to reconcile not expecting spiritual authority to be 100% perfect and accepting their words as the words of Krishna? Well, there could have been a more difficult question than this one. But I won't suggest a more difficult question than this one. Prabhupada spoke like this. He said a number of times, listen to his recorded conversations and talks and so in lectures, he says it a number of times. Sometimes he says, I may be imperfect. And other times he says, I am imperfect. But if I speak the words of a perfect person, then my speaking is perfect. Real simple. Like a child. The child may ask, "Mommy, what's this?" And mommy or daddy says, "This is microphone." So the child goes, "This is microphone." Now, what their understanding of what microphone is may not be very elevated, may not very involved. But their speaking is perfect because they heard from authority and they simply say what they heard from authority. Similarly, Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. Prabhupada would appreciate Malati and Shyamasundar's little daughter, Saraswati, who happens to live in Chicago, by the way. And she, as a little girl, would go and ask business people and all types, you know, strangers, people that just were nearby. Little girl looking up, tugging on their cloth, and they look down and say, "Yes, what is it?" She said, "Do you know who is Krishna?" "No, I don't know who is Krishna." "He's the supreme personality of Godhead." So her speaking is perfect. What her realization of that is or was or is another thing. But the speaking, she may not be a perfect person, but her speaking is perfect. And so the transparency of speaking is the responsibility of the speaker, not to invent, because we're imperfect. And since we're imperfect, whatever it is that we say is imperfect. Whatever we create is imperfect. He would say like that about, you know, telescopes and microscopes. So it was things that would see things that the eye can't see, but it's created by an imperfect senses, and so the seeing is imperfect. So what can they see, etc. Can natural feelings of love be generated through any process? I'm assuming that natural feelings of love means bhakti, not what other people call love. So, can natural feelings of love of God be generated through any, quote, process? Well, yes and no. I mean, if the element of bhakti is present, then love of God can be awakened, perhaps gradually, but can be awakened. There's direct, and then there's indirect, or that which leads to direct. And you follow the indirect that leads to direct, and then the answer is yes. But the element of bhakti must be there. So, whoever wrote this, is that you want to clarify your question, or you're okay? Nobody raises their hand, I'm going to move on. Okay, moving on. Oh. Can you supply a one-line definition of Krishna consciousness? How about Manmana Bhava Mad Bhakto Madhyaji Mam Namaskuru? That's a half a line. Or Anyabhilashita Shunyam Jnana Karmajanavritam Anukulyena Krishna Anushilanam Bhaktiru Tama. There's a one line. That's a definition of bhakti. Bhakti is that which is favorable to Krishna, because Krishna consciousness, like Kamsa, was Krishna conscious in that he always thought of Krishna, Manmana. But he didn't get the Madbhakta part down. Or Mam Namaskuru, he didn't get that part down. But he was always thinking of Krishna, so he was Krishna conscious. But then serving favorably. Okay, we'll come to some other ones. You're a prolific group. I don't know how I'm going to finish in time. Okay. From many examples in the Vedic literature, we have seen that the future of a living entity is already predetermined, like in the case of Prahlad Maharaj or even Srila Prabhupada, it was foretold that he will open 108 temples at the age of 70. So, my question is, if it is already determined, namely the future, for each living entity, can the sadhana practice make us go beyond what is already predetermined? Before I say yes or no, how many would say yes and how many would say no? How many would say yes? How many would say no? Would you like to volunteer your reasons why no, Srinath? Dependent is different than predetermined. Oh, your argument is, the whole question is misleading to say that everything is predetermined when everything isn't predetermined. That's your point? Yes? Yes. Yes or no? Can you give him the microphone so we can, and speak slowly because I'm deaf.
Like if we are engaged in karmic activities, then our fate is predetermined. Like we will be in the cycle of repeated birth and death. But we can definitely cut this cycle by practicing Krishna consciousness.
So then your answer is yes.
Yes.
Okay. I thought you had your hand up for a no. You had your hand up for a no. Let's hear your thoughts on why not. Things are not predetermined. Even you do your sadhana, it's not predetermined. You're not changing predetermined things because?
No, material things are predetermined, but the spiritual things...
Speak slowly. Spiritual things what?
How much we want to advance in Krishna consciousness, that is not predetermined.
Oh. So if we do our sadhana nicely, we can change predetermination.
Only in spiritual life. But
only in spiritual life. But if we change our sadhana, well, even material life. Supposing once upon a time, one of us, before we came in contact with Krishna consciousness, our life was going in a certain trajectory. Had we not started chanting and doing sadhana bhakti, our life would have unfolded one way, which would be determined by destiny, by, astrological influences and whatever else, karma and guna and all that stuff. But something happened. Causeless mercy happened. And we started practicing sadhana bhakti, and our life started going in a different direction. So that's changing predetermination, isn't it?
Suppose I have to get X amount of suffering, like because of my previous life's karmic reactions. So even if I become devotee, I may get the same only.
No. It may be reduced, and it may just be gone. But if it's reduced or if it's gone or even if it's something close to the same, it's not based on predetermination, it's based on Krishna's direct intervention. What do you think? Okay.
that was a yes.
So we're all on the yes page. Okay. I sometimes feel that I should have taken birth as a boy so that I can serve my spiritual master / all sannyasis. Devotees tell me / try to convince me how Krishna and Guru will be pleased by rendering other services also. So my question is, how to develop that mood? One way to develop that mood is just accept the arrangement that Krishna has made. That's a starting point. Maybe whoever's asking this question, you probably recall our say yes to Krishna. Maybe we should do it again. Maybe some people forgot. Say yes to Krishna retreat in Gita Nagari. And I've spoken about it since then. One of the verses that I gave somewhere in the blurry past week or so was exactly that. Just say yes to Krishna and be happy. So if I'm born in America instead of India, I didn't hear about Krishna until I was so many years old, 21 years old, didn't even hear. So how unfortunate. Then there's other people that heard about Krishna because they were born in India, and they heard, you know, all kinds of things that have nothing to do with Krishna, about Krishna. How unfortunate. But at least hearing Krishna, that's fortunate. So what to do? I was born in America and I didn't hear till I was... So you accept the situation that you, whatever it is, whatever the package is, at the moment the light goes on and says, Krishna. From that moment, whatever it is, male body, female body, this one, that one, whatever it is, fortunate, unfortunate, accept the arrangement that Krishna has provided. That's due to my past free will choices. Here I am. Now, let me say yes to Krishna. Krishna is giving me this opportunity to serve him. Thank you, Krishna. And my goodness, it's a very challenging circumstance I find myself in. So therefore, I'm very dependent upon you. My capacity as in a body of a female is a different kind of service than but there's a very important service that those who are females, souls and female bodies have to render for the continuance of the mission of our founder Acharya and the previous Acharyas and the present Society of ISKCON. And I have a role to play, and it's an important role to play. Let me accept that arrangement of Krishna and live my life accordingly and be happy, saying yes to Krishna all the way. And if Krishna wants, Krishna can do whatever he wants. He can take me out of this situation and put me in a different one. He can do whatever he likes. But my response to Krishna is yes, I accept. Can a neophyte devotee aspire for deity worship? Sure. And what is the qualification? Well, the first qualification is desire, and then also purity. Because worshipping the deity form of the Lord is very responsible service, and it's one thing to stand here in the temple room and see the beautiful form of the deity very nicely decorated. By the way, whenever we have visiting speakers here, like Amala Bhakta was recently visiting here, and he's in Los Angeles, and he's, you know, Rukmini Dwarkadish, but he was appreciating how beautiful are the deities and how beautifully they're dressed and served and decorated and, you know, everything, very nice. Devaki Nandan, visiting from Bombay, describes him similarly. So here we are, we're very fortunate. We see this nice deity worship. And to desire to directly do deity worship, we have to become qualified. We have to become brahminically initiated, which means we have to be recognized and undergo some cleansing, purification to qualify ourselves to worship the deity. So first is the desire, or first is the purity, and along with the purity, the desire to serve in that particular way. I'm just hearing a recording of Tamal Krishna speaking something about Prabhupada, and he said, this is a little boost for the pujaris. He said three or four days before Prabhupada left this world. He's in Vrindavan, lying on his bed in Vrindavan, and he motioned for Tamal Krishna to come, and he wanted to speak something. He could only speak in like a whisper, because that was the amount of strength he had in his voice. And he said something to the effect that there's no more favorable position to be in than being a pujari, serving the deity. You remember that one? Cool. And because it's very intimate service. Very intimate service. And if one's consciousness is proper, it's the same thing that one does in the spiritual world. All the things that the pujaris do, it's the practice session for going to the spiritual world. Truly. But one has to be qualified to have that good fortune. And it's truly good fortune. Okay, so our business is not working. And our real business is satisfying Krishna. I don't know about this. Where did you hear this lecture? You have the quote exactly according to what Prabhupada said. Are you sure? I'm not. Because I've never heard Prabhupada say, our business is not working. Yeah, I'm not sure. But that's not your question. Your question is how to satisfy Krishna and how to evaluate that we are satisfying him. Well, the simple answer that Prabhupada gave in answer to that is through the spiritual master. Yasya prasada, bhagavad prasada. You know the meaning, right? By pleasing the spiritual master, one gets the mercy of Krishna. And without pleasing the spiritual master, one doesn't get the mercy of Krishna. It's like checkmate. So that's the indication. If the spiritual master is satisfied, then Krishna is satisfied. So, and then the rest of those, the verses in those prayers are indications of what's pleasing to the spiritual master. Shringara tan mandira marjanado, when very pleasing to the spiritual master to see the disciple engaging in shringar, worship of the deity, and the cleansing of the temple. Just like after everyone took prasadam very happily and went somewhere, there were devotees down there cleaning in the prasadam hall. And they should know, we should know, that's very pleasing to the spiritual master because it's cleansing Krishna's temple, which is there. That's the indicator it's pleasing to Krishna. And to do those things nicely, not just do them, but do them very nicely. Do them with devotion for Krishna. That's pleasing to Krishna. That which is offered with love. Patram pushpam palam poitoyam yome bhaktya prayachati. That's pleasing to Krishna. how to develop implicit faith in the instructions of the spiritual master. That's our life, isn't it? Associate with those who have implicit faith in the instructions of the spiritual master, and that will be a big asset in developing implicit faith in the instructions of the spiritual master. Hearing very carefully, hearing with great attention the instructions of the spiritual master will help us develop, first of all, help us develop a proper understanding of what the instructions are, and then impetus to apply them from hearing very carefully, and then applying them very carefully. It's Prabhupada's example in my practical experience, probably ours also, is faith. One of them is in the Bhagavad Gita. Faith is developed in the association of devotees. Another is faith increases by acting in knowledge. When you act in knowledge, something happens. It works. And when it works, something happens. Aha! Some confidence in the knowledge that you applied. And then confidence in the source of the knowledge that you applied. So acting in knowledge increases faith. So take out of the things that one hears from the spiritual master, or the spiritual master is speaking on behalf of the disciplic succession. So the messages of the disciplic succession, there are many. And of those many, some resonate most strongly. And take those in acknowledgement of the instruction and the source of the instruction, apply them because it resonates. You go to the laboratory of life and you apply them and see what happens. And voila, something happens. Wow. That increases your faith by acting in knowledge. And then you want to go back to that source and hear something more. And then you hear something more. And out of those more things that you hear, something particularly resonates. And then you go to the laboratory of your life and, you know, repeat, just apply it, and voila. And so faith increases. So faith grows and grows and grows and grows and grows. As long as one doesn't become complacent, and as long as there's a genuine quest for truth or reality with capital T or a capital R. I don't see them here. There's two students that are spending this weekend with us. They left. They're really nice. I mean, they're very different, the two of them, but they're sincerely searching for the truth. They don't know exactly what that is, but, you know, they're sincerely searching. And that's fantastic. So out of all the things that they encountered, I'm sure they're going to go back and apply some of the things that resonated, and voila. And they want to go, it's like that, progressively. The caution is, like the question is implicit faith, so the caution is don't slacken. Don't become complacent. Tendency is, now I'm comfortable. Until then you start to feel uncomfortable again. Whoa, I better sit straight here and like pay attention and like that. The tendency, we're lazy, spiritually especially. Lazy. We want to be comfortable. We don't want to be uncomfortable. But a sincere person wants, you know, the full truth, and stay there. So don't become complacent. That helps to develop implicit faith. What are some of your favorite prayers and why? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. I like Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita. There was one bhakta that used to come to the temple in Brooklyn, and he really liked the Panchatattva mantra. He would, like, you know, he would chant 16 rounds, but he'd also chant some rounds of the Panchatattva mantra because he really liked the Panchatattva mantra. And it wasn't kind of childish and it went away. It was coming around for about a year, and he really liked the Panchatattva mantra. I think he moved after that, so I don't know if he still has an attraction for the Panchatattva mantra. But, you know, it was genuine attraction. I like the prayer of Rupa Goswami about the introductory verse to Vidugdha Madhava, Lalita Madhava, the prayer glorifying the holy name. You know that one? Who can say how much nectar there is in the two syllables Krishna? You know that one? When the sound of Krishna is on one's tongue, one desires to have thousands of tongues. That one. Now you know. And when the sound enters the holes of the ear, one desires millions of ears. That would look pretty funny. Millions of ears. And when the sound vibration Krishna enters into the chamber of the heart, the mind becomes stunned, the senses become inert, and one feels the presence of Krishna in one's heart. I like that one. I also like the one that we chanted this morning. Raghunath Das appreciating Rupa Goswami in that way. Taking a straw in my teeth, I bow again and again and pray that again and again, however many births, I can just get a particle of dust from the lotus feet of Rupa Goswami. And he meant it. Those are some favorites. You're lucky you didn't ask Dravida the question. I was sitting with him at Prashadam and said, okay, how are we going to discuss tomorrow morning's classes, both of us, on the power of prayer? And, you know, he just did a scan. I could see it in his mind. All these prayers. And there's volumes. He's a walking encyclopedia. And then he said, I can think of so many prayers, but now let me try to think instead on the power of prayer. So we worked something out. He's probably upstairs making it. So he's going to cover the Gajendra Moksha prayers, at least key ones, and describe. You know, he'll recite it from memory, but we'll be able to see it on the screen. And the prayer and how it moved him and how it, the power of prayer, how it transformed him. I like that prayer also. The prayer at the end where he prays, I don't have to pray for anything. I don't have to pray that please get this crocodile off my leg. I know that I'll be protected by you. My real prayer is, on the other side of this dilemma, may never forget your devotional service. Or Brahma's prayer, when he prays to Vishnu, Vishnu asks him to take a benediction, and his benediction he wishes is that I'll never fall into the mistaken position of thinking that I'm the creator while doing the creation. It's you. Or Prahlad that prays, I don't want anything. I only want the association of Narada, so that I can, through Narada, I can learn how to better serve you. Those are some nice prayers. There's many nice prayers. I don't want to go back without the fools and rascals of this world that are unfortunately suffering. My prayer to you is that you allow me to take them with me. If we see our very good devotee friend having troubles in their Krishna consciousness, should we fear to tell the authorities about their falling down or try to maintain loving relationships with them? We are scared that our suggestions and actions might ruin the relationship. One of these, maybe we'll save that for tomorrow too. Confidentiality is important. When there's a fire, putting the fire out is also important. You know, you could maintain confidentiality. So-and-so has a fire in their house. Don't tell anybody. I promised I wouldn't tell. There's a fire in the house. Now, you don't have to alert the universe that somebody is having some difficulty, but when there are trustworthy persons who can help somebody that's in difficulty and do so without betraying the confidence that you've informed them, and that at the same time they can help put the fire out of the person's difficulty, then best to have relationships with persons that have that capacity to not break confidentiality, but at the same time help someone that's in difficulty. That's part of what being a friend is. As is confidentiality, part of what's being a friend. What does it take to go back home, back to Godhead? ... For sure. Underlined three times. Prabhupada said, just grab hold of my dhoti. I'll take you back to Godhead. There's his dhoti. To enter into fire, one must become fire. Prabhupada explained. To go back to Godhead, one must be pure. And pure means 100% pure. So that's what we require. And supposing, I'm going to save another answer to this for another time. But one thing that Prabhupada said was, if you are very sincere and if you haven't fully completed your Krishna consciousness, but you're very sincere and you've tried very, very with great effort to try to purify your life, Lord Chaitanya may come and intervene, or he said will come and intervene and take you back to Godhead. You commit, you dedicate your life to propagating the mission of Lord Chaitanya, and at the time of death he will intervene. And but this is like for sure? For sure. Is it recommended or accepted if one wants to stay outside the temple single doing a job and offers their salary in Krishna service? Well, yes. But one should do something, one should make a decision to do something like that with proper guidance. Specifically, not short term but long term, because working outside, stay outside the temple, single, doing a job. There's, it's kind of like a brahmachari grihastha or something like that. It's like fifth ashram. And there's only four. So it's possible. I know people that do that, but the people that do that and have been able to sustain doing that have done so with specific authorization from some spiritual authority, spiritual teacher or spiritual master to do like that. When in fact, they're truly detached. But the sense of responsibility to provide some income for their parents or something like that. Like, one example is our temple president of both Tuwako Temple and the Central New Jersey Temple. His name is Madhupati Prabhu. He's not married, and he's not only has a job, but he's a temple president of two temples, and he's maintaining his parents, and his brother died, so he's maintaining his brother's family, his brother's wife and their children. He's not married. Now that's a unique person. And there was some stage of his life he considered marriage and considered a particular candidate to marry and decided against it. And he's doing fine. He's more than doing fine. He's an exceptional person. And I can think of some other examples that it's doable. But that's the exception. And to do that for some time, that's fine. Now, the question isn't do it for some time. The question seems to be like long term. And long term, then that should be very carefully considered with some proper guidance. Wow. How do you decrease confidence in finding happiness in sense gratification? This is a devotee question. Who would ask a question like this except for a devotee? One